the center of the Air Check universe.
Music Radio,
the greatest air checks.
There's only one.
Challenged anybody. She was something, Bernice Judas. We called her Tootie. I remember once she hired a guy, true story. She hired a guy in the, I think it was sometime in the 40s, who was the worst disc jockey I've ever heard. But Tootie hired him because very naturally this guy sounded like Cary Grant. He just sounded like, and it wasn't, an affectation. He would get on the air and say, WNEW in New York. And Tootie flipped. We got to have this guy. He could not ad-lib anything. He couldn't read copy. He didn't know anything about popular music. But he sounded like Cary Grant. So he lasted about 20 minutes. But she was something. Those early days of radio, WNEW was, we use the phrase now, the nation's pioneer music and news station. That's not an idle phrase. It was true then, it's true now. But certainly at that point, basically, there was no television at that point. And the competition really was the network, or were the network stations. And all the announcers on the network stations sounded like they cupped their hands over their ears and were very stilted. And with Martin Block's entry into this New York radio market, a whole new posture emerged. The music of that era was just happened to be, I think, the best. The big band sound, band vocalists like Sinatra with Tommy Dorsey, like Bob Eberle with Jimmy Dorsey, and Helen Forrest with Artie Shaw. Dick Hames, people like that. It was just, they were good times.
This is the chairman of the board. I'm not really the chairman of the board, but a fistful of years ago, William B. said that I was, so I spend most of my time trying to live up to his billing. If there truly is a chairman, he is the chairman of the board of friendship, love, integrity, talent, and more than anything else, chairman of loyalty. And I'll go one step further. I've been blessed in many ways during my lifetime, and William B. falls in that category. So that says it for me. I'm blessed to know him, and I love him as all of you do. Good luck, Willie. God bless.
We've come a long way together, you and I. All the way from nowhere to somewhere. And you've stuck by me every inch of the way. I love you.
Put your dreams away for another day, and I will take their place in your heart, wishing on a star never got you far. And so it's time to make start. When your dreams at night fade before you, then I'll have the right to adore you. Let your kiss confess this is happiness, darling, and put all your dreams away. for you. Then I'll have the right to adore you. Let your kiss confess this is happiness, darling, and put all your dreams away.
Years ago, William B. Williams fell to reminiscing about his early years at WNEW.
In the 40s, among others, I remember who worked at the station. We were at 501 Madison Avenue in those days. Robert Q. Lewis did the early morning show, the show that Teddy does now. And after Robert Q. Lewis left, there were Rayburn and Lasculli, Gene Rayburn and Jack Lasculli. And then, of course, Rayburn and Finch, and then Clavin and Finch. And who else worked around at that point? Dennis James was working at WNEW at that juncture. And it was fun working in those days. Nobody made much money except Martin Block. Martin always made a lot of money. But the rest of us kind of struggled along. But as I say, it was really fun radio in the sense that TV had not yet become the tremendous influence that it was to become later. And independent radio, particularly WNEW in New York, was the independent radio station in the whole nation. It was the radio station that all the other independent radio stations looked up to. It was a spawn. I mentioned Martin Black. There was a fellow who worked here at that point named Maurice Hart. Now, Maurice Hart, and I one day I remember seeing this work. Martin Block could start a sentence, and Maurice could pick up the sentence in the middle. And unless you were there in the studio, you didn't know that a change had taken place. He sounded that much like Martin Block. Maurice did a show that Jim Lowe now does called The Music Hall. Then there were people like Burt Wayne, who worked here in those days. And, gee, we had a bunch of guys who were very nice and very talented.
When Nat Cole passed away, William B. Williams made a vow to Nat's widow that he would play a Nat Cole record on his shows for as long as he was on the air. And he did, too, up until the last show that he did. Back in the early 1960s, William B. did a special here on WNEW with Nat Cole live on WNEW. It was recorded on the 24th of November, 1962, and we felt that it would make an important part of this tribute to William B. Williams here on WNEW today.
This is William B., and what a beautiful way to spend a noontime. For the next 30 minutes, we're recording a music spectacular with Nat King Cole.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came from you. I'm gonna write words oh so sweet. They're gonna knock me off of my feet. A lot of kisses on the bottom. I'll be glad I got 'em. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better. I'm close with love the way that you do. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came from you. Kisses on the bottom, I'll be glad I got them. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better. I'm cold with love the way that you do. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came. Write down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came. Make believe that it came from you.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter. Our guest on the Music Spectacular is Nat King Cole. Nathaniel, welcome. It's a boot. I can't tell you how much of a boot it is to be on the show with you and to hear the voice again.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be back doing some live music for a change.
Whatever happened to live music?
Well, I don't know. They put it away in a can somewhere, but we hope to continue with this. This is a wonderful idea.
This next tune is, I guess you'd call it a fairly obscure Rodgers and Hart tune, and it's kind of a torch song, really. I wonder, Nat, when you do a torch song like this, Nobody's Heart, when you do it in a nightclub, do you have to think of something sad in order to get into the mood to do it?
Well, I think singing and performing is what we would call a little form of acting, and I think you have to sort of build yourself into some sort of a mood to really put across certain lyrics of certain songs. And this one particularly is a very quiet and very sad type of a song. In fact, it was one of the great Rodgers and Hart songs that I remember years ago.
You're a singer boy.
Tell you, that's pretty.
Gee, that's pretty.
Is that a pretty song?
I said, it's a fairly old Rodgers and Hart tune. Not one of their bigger hits, either.
No, but you know, this is a most unusual song because if you notice, the first part of the song sounds like a verse.
Mm-hmm. And it's part of the chorus.
This is one of the most unusual songs because the whole song actually sounds like a verse. It doesn't run in the same pattern as a lot of songs that you know, are familiar with, where they got 16 bars in the front, a bridge, and then an out, half and half. But this one is quite unusual. That's why the reason I like this one.
This next tune, The Way You Look Tonight, was in an early Astaire Rogers flicker. Nat, you seem to like the older songs, it seems, more than some of the newer ones. What's your answer to people who say they're not writing songs like they used to?
Well, Bill, I think they're still writing songs like they used to. It's just the fact that a lot of songwriters are discouraged because they don't find too many artists that will stick their neck out and attempt to try to do something of them.
Now, I've heard you do this tune in your nightclub act. Who did the arrangement on this? It swings.
A fellow by the name of Charlie Albertine did this, and he's done some very nice arrangements for me in the past. And this one has a cute little swinging emotion about it.
Here then, Nat Cole and The Way You Look Tonight.
Someday, when I'm awfully low and the world is cold, I will feel a glow just dreaming of just the way you look tonight. Oh, but you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft. There is nothing for me but to love you just the way you look tonight. With each word your tenderness grows, tearing my fears apart, and that laugh that wrinkles your nose touches my foolish heart. Oh, but your lovely never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. With each word your tenderness grows, carrying my fears apart, and that laugh that wriggles your nose touches my foolish heart. Oh, but your love may never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love just the way you look, just the way you look, just the way you look tonight. Just the way you look, just the way you look, just the way you look tonight.
Immortal words, Nat, of the president of Con Edison. That's a gas.
Thank you.
That swings.
That swings pretty good. It's a cute song.
This next tune, I guess you'd call this a singer's song. It's a tune written by a fellow named Bart Howard, who works in town at the Blue Angel.
Yes, and he has written some great songs. In fact, now here's an example of what we were just talking about. You said the guys don't write good old songs anymore, but he is coming through with some wonderful melodies and lyrics.
Nat Cole, and another, anything else about the song we should know, Nat?
No, well, I just was going to say that this what helps to make a song a standard. Continuous performances, like you've heard on so many recordings by so many wonderful singing artists, and these are the things that eventually throw these things into this great standardized, like the way you look tonight, and sit right down and write myself a letter. Yeah.
All right. Nat Cole, then, and this is Bart Howard's In Other Words.
Poets often use many words to say a simple thing. It takes thought and time and rhyme to make a poem sing. With music and words I've been playing for you, I have written a song. To be sure that you'll know what I'm saying, I'll translate as I go along. Fly me to the moon, and let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, song, and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words,
that's like having your stock go up 10 points, I tell you. Or the smile of a woman in love. You sing real purdy.
Oh, no.
That song is beautiful, too.
I'm trying to learn, you know, after all these years, you know.
I have a theory, Nat, that if they put strings in back of you and gave you the Cincinnati phone book, and you recited the phone book with a string, it would sound like a love song.
And you know what? I want to try that one of these days. I heard a couple of guys say that. In fact, I wish we had time now. We'd scan through the first alphabetical words like A, Johnson, Adam, you know, all the different names. I'm going to try that as a gag.
Yeah, but the Cincinnati phone book is the acid test.
Oh, the Cincinnati
one? Have you looked through the Cincinnati?
Why, because you mean all those weird names, huh? Like Klazuski and stuff.
Ted Klazuski, among others. Well, I'll tell you what, Nat. I don't know if you've heard the musical themes that we have at WNEW. I wonder if we could impose upon you, and I'd like the audience to hear what the musical themes would sound like if you dealt with them. So that's waltzing or merengueing over to the piano amidst...
let me see.
Like
the wrong one.
Only one.
Oh, yeah.
There's only one W.
The station
never had it so good.
That's pretty. I didn't know we sounded like that.
Well, let me see.
We have a couple of others. Do you think you could run through them?
Yeah, you want to try one?
Well,
why don't you sing one, then?
I don't know. I figure
the world hear that undiscovered voice.
Do you think this might lead to Chubby Checker? Or...
it might lead to disaster.
Something. I figure in years to come, I can say to my son, Jeffrey, I hired me a piano player one
without
day.
Without a tux. Ready? Ready?
What key is this in?
This is in, wait a minute, what key did we... Oh, yes, B flat, okay?
I don't think I can talk in that key.
Huh?
But I'll try.
Oh, I got the wrong page, Bill. I don't want to give you...
Well, the way I sing that, it really doesn't make much difference what page
it makes
you're
a lot of difference here.
This is the one, I think this is the one, you're listening to the wonderful...
No, don't sing yet. Wait a minute.
Oh, save it, right?
That's
okay.
Easy. Oh,
ladies
here we go.
And gentlemen, as I said, they hired me a piano player.
Here we go.
You're listening to the wonderful sound of music round the clock on WNEW in New York.
Very good. You got that husky sound like I have. Keep working on it.
How do you mean that, keep working on it?
Keep smoking. See?
I got no place to go but up, right?
Funny thing, like a guy, if I ever cleared up my voice, I'd go out of business. That's why I keep smoking.
Okay, Nat. I'll remember that. Boy, if that becomes a big rock and roll hit, you'll be sorry.
All right.
Tell you what, as long as you're at the piano, through the years now, I guess some people have forgotten that Nat started as a jazz pianist. Matter of fact, some of your first dates were here in town at Kelly Stables, right?
That's right, over on 52nd Street there.
Over on 52nd. You were in Kelly Stable when one of the other groups was Coleman Hawkins.
Yes, Coleman Hawkins was there at the time, and Billie Holiday was there. Billy Daniels, Art Tatum was working there at the time, too.
Fair to Midland talents. Mm. So here's Nat back with his first love, the piano, and this is again a Rodgers and Hart tune. Listen to what Nathaniel does with Where or When.
Thank you.
play it till Liberace opens at Birdland.
Sound like Liberace sometimes. Not that's offensive, you know.
But that's a swinging piano. I can tell that you still get a big boot out of playing.
You know, it's a funny thing. I very seldom practice, but I still enjoy playing the piano. Of course, there are so many wonderful jazz musicians around the world today that I'm sort of glad I'm not in that race. Guys like Peterson, George Shearing, and all those guys, you know, they... my great favorites, anyway.
This next song, again, is a torch song, and it's one of my favorites. I don't know if this was one of your big sellers, Funny, but I love it. I love the lyric, and I know you do it sometimes in your nightclub act.
Yes, Funny, I recorded a long time ago with Pete Rugolo. He did the orchestration on the original version, and then recently I did it in an album with Ralph Carmichael, rescoring it again. And I always get a lot of requests for this song. This is one of those good earthy type songs that people just seem to remember always.
Do you sometimes get shook up, Nat, when you record a song and figure that this will be a hit, and then it doesn't turn out to be, and then one you figure nothing's going to happen with, and it becomes a big hit? Can you tell in front?
No, if I did, I'd just go out just predicting. I would just quit recording and just go open up an office and call myself Nat the Predictor.
Drew Cole.
Yes, and then I'm just...
99 and 44 100%. Yeah. Well, this is one of my favorites.
I would also do that with the Giants, the football games, too, you see.
I wouldn't start on the Giants if I were you.
They're good.
All right.
Good club. They'll take and kill you.
They sure can if you bet against them.
That's right. You're talking to one who knows.
And after that, how appropriate is Nat to sing Funny?
Funny how I've stopped loving you. I can pass you on the street and my heart don't skip a beat, not much. So much my eyes wanna cry. Funny how I've stopped loving you. I can listen to your name and it doesn't start a flame, not much. So much my heart wants to die. Shed a tear. This is just the rain in my eyes. And if I have proved to you everything I say is true, please help me believe my own lies. Funny how I've stopped loving you, and it's funny I don't miss all the heaven in your kiss, your touch. No, I don't love you, not much. No, I don't love you.
Our guest on our music spectacular, Nat King Cole. To wind us up, Nat, this is kind of an incongruous tune, I think, for you, the Surrey with the Fringe on Top. How'd you ever happen to decide on this tune itself?
Well, I've been listening to this song so many years. I hear so many people singing in so many different ways. So Dave Cavanaugh, who, you know, naturally works for Capitol Records in the A&R department, he's a pretty fair arranger himself. And we got together and started spattering ideas around, and he came up with an idea of doing it in a sort of a swing fashion, although it's very wordy when you pick the tempo up. But I've gotten so used to saying them fast, and particularly use a little stair-step build-up on the particular end of this song. It's quite different. And All right. It is a little incongruous, but the way it's put together, he sort of gave it a new little touch.
Let's listen to it then. Nat Cole and Dave Cavanaugh's arrangement of Surrey with the Fringe on top.
Ducks and geese that scurry when I take you out in Surrey, when I take you out in Surrey with the French on top. I watch that frenzy hot flutters when I drive them high step trotters, nosy pokes, I peek through the shutters and the eyes I will pop. The wheels are yellow, the upholstery's brown, the dashboard's genuine leather. With ice glass curtains, you can roll right down in case there's a change in the weather. A right side lights are winking and a blinking. Ain't no final rig, I'm thinking. You can keep your rig if you're thinking that I care to swap for that shiny little survey with the fringe on the top. Can see the stars getting blurry when we drive back home in the Surrey, driving slowly home in Surrey with the fringe on top. I can feel the day getting older, feel a sleepy head on my shoulder, not moving close to my shoulder, kill it all, kip up. The sun is swimming on the rim of the hill, the moon is taking a header, and just as I'm thinking everything is still, a lark will wake up in the meadow. My baby's sleeping. Maybe got a dream worth keeping. Whoa, you cheap. Just keep creeping at a slow flip flop. Don't you hurry, bitch, hurry, bitch. A fringe on the top. When we ride in Surrey, we will hide every worry. You and me in the Surrey, gay and free. In the Surrey, things get sweet. In the Surrey, can't be beat. In the Surrey, there's a lot more. In the Surrey, that's for sure. Don't you worry, we'll fly high. In the Surrey, reach the sky. In the Surrey, as we fly. In the Surrey, side by side. In the Surrey, you lose this. In the Surrey, to get kissed. In the Surrey, I can't please it. In the Surrey, with a friend.
Sorry with the fringe on top. Nat, I've been trying to figure out how to end the show, and I figure that, and I mean this sincerely, your talent is the end. I mean it. And to Joe Zito and all the musicians, our thanks. I think your impeccable good taste in the way you sing and the way you present a show in a nightclub or wherever is literally the end. So I can think of no nicer way to end the show than to tell you, you are the end, Nat.
Thank you, old buddy. It was nice visiting with you, and I've been looking forward to this visit up here with WNEW to try to bring back some beautiful live music, as we were saying earlier. And feel free to call me again, you know.
Right,
I'm available.
How's next week?
How about tomorrow? Hey?
Our guest has been Nat Cole, a sports enthusiast and the real leader of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
This is William B., and we recorded a music spectacular here at WNEW in New York.
And who can ever forget that blustery March day earlier this year when at a packed Waldorf Astoria, Frank Sinatra and William B. Williams had their last meeting together on the air on WNEW.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest, the chairman of the board, Francis Albert Sinatra. What are all these people doing in our room?
I was just going to ask you the same question. What are people doing in my room?
I see you have with you some charts. Obviously, you're on your way to a rehearsal.
That's a lot of music.
That's a lot of music. You have, over a few years, scribbled on a few charts in your lifetime.
Sure.
You've worked with... Earlier, I posed the question about the big bands that you have recorded with. Obviously, people think of Tommy and Harry James, but you recorded with Basie and with Ellington.
The Spanish Cat.
The Spanish cat. Antonio Carlos Jobim.
No, he's a Portuguese cat. The guy in Spain. I forgot. I did a couple of sides with him. Cugat.
Cugat. Javier Cugat.
And who else did I record with?
Well, of course, beyond the big bands, you have always surrounded yourself, and we've discussed this in past years, Frank. I asked you how vital arrangers were, and you pointed out that people like Don Costa and Nelson Riddle and Gordy Jenkins were all vital, integral parts.
Each man had his own stamp, in a sense, when he did an orchestration. No two of the people with whom I've ever worked, which have been about a dozen of them, I guess, no two of them ever wrote in the same essence, you might say. Mm-hmm. They all had their own little trademark. Jenkins always had the big string section going, and Nelson combined the strings with the trombones and the saxophones. And Don Costa was a there's no label on him. He came up with anything you needed, he would write for you. And Billy May, of course, is probably, I think, one of the most ingenious orchestrators with whom I've ever worked. I always felt that Billy May should have been signed by the Disney Company for his whole lifetime. Because he could make any kind of noises you want to make.
Most recently, your most recent album, you worked with Quincy Jones. The album, of course, titled L.A. Is My Lady. Quincy is one of the most sought-after arrangers, musicians, whatever, in the business today.
Well, he's had a lot of success, and obviously success is followed by people who want some more success. They figure that he can help them.
Right.
And Quincy is a most talented man. I've known him and worked with him a long time, many times. He's now become maybe one of the best producers of recordings. And all of the other technicalities about recording. He's so wise to all of that stuff.
When you were doing the recording, that part of the recording session here in New York with Quincy on L.A. Is My Lady, I was at one of the sessions when Michael Jackson came in. And I remember you saying that you better take a picture with him so that your grandchildren, or else you wouldn't be able to go
home.
That's
true. Yeah, that's true.
If you didn't take a picture with Michael Jackson.
I told the kids that, my kids, that Michael might come over to one of the record dates. And they said, we got to have a photograph. And I said, okay, we'll get you a photograph. Well, I guess like most of the youngsters are all pretty wild about Michael.
Yeah.
He's a nice boy. He really is.
I don't think you dance quite the way Michael Jackson does.
No. No, it's not possible. You haven't got those kind of genes to begin with. I was lucky to do what I did with Kelly, let alone with Michael Jackson.
You had a pretty good tutor in Gene Kelly.
Yeah,
This Sunday night, Frank, at Radio City Music Hall, you have gotten unto yourself, you have surrounded yourself with quite a group of talents. And, of course, this is Sinatra 6, the sixth year that you'll be raising money for Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. I think it's upwards of $11 million so far. This year you have Placido Domingo. Now, Placido Domingo, of course, his work in the operatic area is well known. When you work with a fellow like Placido Domingo or with Luciano Pavarotti, do you sometimes clear your throat and say, what's a kid from Jersey doing with this cat?
Every time. Every time you think to yourself, why am I on the same stage with a man like this? But in the case of Placido, he does enough English music, too, in English. We should have a lot of opportunities to work together. Whereas with Pavarotti, he has trouble with using the English language. And consequently, what I did was, I did the verse of O Solo Mi, and he did the chorus. And we didn't rehearse it at all. We talked it over, and when he hit the first note, he nearly blew me right off the stage. He nearly blew me off the stage. But it's fun for them to work, for the people from the classic world, to work with us in the jazz world. They get a big kick out of it, too, as we do working with them. And that particular time, I was having a little problem. I think I told you the story about his
marvelous story.
And he came to Carnegie Hall to see the show. And we were sitting in the dressing room, and I said to Pavarotti, I'm having a little trouble controlling a diminuendo, meaning to close off a note so that it just dies away to like a thin as a butter knife. And I said, I wonder if you could tell me how I could do what I could do about that. He said, just to close your mouth. What he said. I expected a very big dissertation on how you do this thing. He just said, you just to close your mouth. If you watch him, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He does that, and then he smiles. And takes out the bed sheet.
Also on the bill with you Sunday night, the gal they call the First Lady of Song, Ella Fitzgerald. I know you've been a Fitzgerald fan for low these many years.
Before she was even Fitzgerald.
Oh, really? I thought she was still Barry. She is... have you ever done an album with Ella?
No, we tried too many times, but there's always the unseen hand that comes in from either side of the fence.
The managers or
the managers,
agents.
The lawyers, the agents, yeah. And it always got knocked out. We even tried with Barbara Streisand, and that never came around either, which was too bad. And
I think once with Lena, too, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But I love working with Ella. We've always had a marvelous time doing it. And never ceases to amaze me. The instrument is just so marvelous. Her range and her sense of harmonics and different wonderful sounds that she makes. Then, of course, we got Redhead here with us on the bill.
Red Buttons.
Yeah. Ooh,
never had a dinner. And also Benny Goodman and the band.
And his, I think, most of his original band.
Yeah. I know he's got Louis Belson on drums.
Yeah, he's got quite a few fellas that I think played with him before.
And he's got all of the Fletcher Henderson arrangements.
Right.
That are just...
Obviously, I'll do something with Ella. Mm-hmm. The Cancer Society Hospital of Sloan Kettering all goes to people who are afflicted but who cannot pay for the treatment. That's why this is a very important kind of benefit. And I think it's helped a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. There is, at Sloan Kettering, the outpatient entrance between York and First Avenue on 67th. As you walk in, there is a little plaque on the wall that says, this wing of Sloan Kettering is through the efforts of Frank Sinatra.
I never saw that.
Yeah.
I never did. Well, I mean, that's very nicely done, but we have to credit all of the other people who partook in those kind of affairs.
There is a Jewish philosopher sage named Samuel Belkin who once said that a man's proximity to God can be measured by his compassion for his fellow human beings. And if indeed that is true, and I believe it to be true, you are a very close man to God, Francis.
You think so?
I really do.
That's quite possible. He was with me when I bet on the Bears, I guess. I don't think.
You did bet the Bears.
Yeah.
Oh, good move. I see somebody up in the balcony holding up a book that was written by your daughter, Nancy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a marvelous book. I had Nancy on the show. I had Nancy on the show about, oh, I don't know, 3-4 months ago when the book first came out. And she presented me with the book. It's a big coffee table type book. And she explores the Sinatra story, even the warts.
Sure.
And there were a couple.
Sure.
But the pictures, the photographs in it are just sensational.
She worked, I think, about 10 years getting that thing together. Very quietly she did it. I never said much to me about it. I knew that she was writing notes to friends and asking for little anecdotes and stuff like that. Some friends did it, replied. Other friends said that they couldn't at the moment, and others just ignored it, which was strange, but that's the way it goes. Maybe they were afraid to say what they wanted to say. I don't know. But I think it's a wonderful book in that she stayed at it for all of those years, a long time. You know, I love her for doing it. And also, I love the fact that she didn't do one of those kill daddy, didn't yeah. kill mama kind of things. Because I got a little weary of those.
I was just going to say, there seems to be a tendency these days for offspring to write that kind of a book. And a fella's afraid to die.
Well,
you know, what are the kids going to say about it?
Yeah. You know that Lassie wrote a book called My Mother the Bitch.
Da-dum-bum. That's why Lassie never had a kennel. Your other daughter, Tina, I read at least, Francis, is preparing a TV, is it a documentary on your life?
Yeah, she's doing a miniseries.
A miniseries. Yeah. Will somebody play you as a young man?
There'll be two actors and myself in the end of it.
Uh-huh.
A young man, middle-aged, and then at my age now.
The young man who plays you as a young man.
Yes.
I sure hope he's ready to lead a full rehearsal.
Or leave town.
Joey Lewis, when Frank Sinatra did The Life of Joey in a picture called The Joker is Wild. Joey, you know, the story may be apocryphal. You can tell me if it's true or not. But supposedly Joey came to the set one day, and there was a break in the action. They were waiting to shoot the next scene, and Frank is seated in one of those canvas chairs and surrounded by like six or seven very long-legged, lovely ladies. And Joey said, "Frank, you're having a better time filming my life than I had living it."
That's what he said. Exactly what he said.
I miss him. I know he was a special friend of yours. He was a lovely man.
I think most of us in our business miss Joe a great deal.
Yeah, he was something special. Joey Lou. He was known as the king of the nightclubs. Speaking of nightclubs, there was a period of time when you worked places in New York, when they had places in New York, like the Copacabana.
Mm-hmm.
And
I also worked in that room right over there.
Over here, that was the Empire?
It was called the Wedgwood Room.
Wedgwood Room. That was a few months ago.
In there, yeah, with Emil Coleman and the DeMarcos, the dance team, and
right.
of different kind of acts in there. I see they made it smaller now. It was a little bigger than that.
Well, we, I think, are drawing more people to this lobby today. It's amazing the effect that Morty Storm has.
Morty Storm III is one of the greats.
He is right there. He's one of the greats. Now, Sunday night, as I said, is on behalf of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. But you and Red are on a tour now, am I right?
Right.
You work the Meadowlands tomorrow night. And then where do you go from there? Do you know offhand?
There we go, Red. Atlantic City. We go Atlantic City.
Oh, that's right. You work the Golden Nugget.
And then we go, then we continue on one-nighters and here and there. We got a lot of work to do.
You mentioned working for Memorial Sloan Kettering over 6 years. Barbara, your wife, has been deeply involved for some years now with the World Mercy Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually happens in New York in the fall, am I right?
Yes, it does, usually.
There's usually a show, in fact, right here at the Waldorf
mm-hmm.
for the World Mercy Fund. And over the years, you've been involved in that and gotten some other performers to come along. Barbara actually went to parts of East Africa
yes,
to see what was going on
she
there.
She spent some time over there. She's now on a something that's rather important, I think, in any nation. She's helping to construct a building in the Eisenhower Center in
Palm Springs,
in Rancho Mirage, that has to do with abused children. She's trying to get the nation more alerted to the fact that the kids are being hurt by grown-ups.
Earlier, somebody was on the show and said that seems to be handed down. In other words, if you were abused as a child, as you become a parent for some reason, when you do become a parent, you seem to have the tendency to abuse your children.
Well, Barbara's told me that in some of the most of the interviews, as a matter of fact, that they have their committee that they have with people who have been abused or are being abused, a boy or a girl of 6 or 7 or 8 years old, they find out that their father or uncle or somebody else was also
an abuser.
A victim. Yes.
Yeah. Or a victim.
That's sad. It's really too bad.
And that's being done out in the Springs.
Yeah.
Oh.
Kids ought to be hugged and kissed and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Don't hurt them.
Your As far as a future album is concerned, I would be torn apart if I didn't ask you whether you have anything in the works as far as another album coming out.
Strangely enough, yesterday, before yesterday, I called up Mr. Jones, Mr. Quincy Jones, and I said, Q, I said, I got an idea for an album. He said, hey, man, he said, I'm dead for 10 months.
Really?
That's it. He said, he laid it on me. I said, goodbye.
So that was it? That but was you it. Would only, you at this point, you'd only want to work with Quincy?
No, not necessarily, but I had an idea that he and I should do something. I have some thoughts. But if we obviously can't wait that long, so we're going to try to do it with one of the other men. Either Billy May or one of the guys like that. We'll do something.
I must tell you that the audience, certainly in this area, and I'm sure all around the nation and the world, is hungry for Sinatra product.
I don't know. I know that they're now beginning to... a group of people are beginning to choose a lot of the things we did with Nelson at Capitol and put them on CDs.
Right.
Now, we're going to make a library of CDs, which I think is kind of fun.
I remember once out at your house in Palm Springs, you showed me you have a section in the viewing room, and you have everything, I guess, you've ever recorded.
Yes, right.
And it's done chronologically and alphabetically and cross-indexed.
Right.
Do you ever run into a situation where you're driving in a car or something and some guy on the air plays a Sinatra recording and you don't remember doing it?
No, unfortunately, the other way it bothers me. I remember the bad note that's coming up. You know it's coming in about four more bars. There's going to be a clam in there somewhere.
We have had so many requests for your version with Dagmar of Mama Will Bark. Would you rather not discuss that?
I would rather not discuss that.
This may come as somewhat of a shock to you, but the WNEW audience has almost a proprietary interest in you. They feel that whatever you do, wherever you go, they follow you, they adore you, and I think we've discussed this before. The love is just incredible.
I know that. Thank you. This may come as a big shock to you, but we're leaving now.
I was just going I know you have a rehearsal.
Yeah.
I thank you. My guest has been the chairman of the board,
That's
Francis Albert
Lamar.
Thank you, Frank. All right. Why do I have the feeling now that the last 9 minutes of the show I'm going to be alone? My guest has been Frank Sinatra. Speaking of Mr. Sinatra, hear this.
This is WNEW, Metro Media Radio in New York. Each day at 10:05, an imperially slim gentleman gambled up to the microphone and proceeded to thrill millions over the wireless, commencing with the greatest opening line since Once Upon a Time. Good morning, world. He, in fact, sweated over this hot microphone owned and operated, as it were, by the far-flung Metro Media Network, a network which, in his opinion, had not been flung far enough. He was hired during the first Grover Cleveland administration and was thereafter heard daily by an audience that stretched from the maritime provinces of Canada to the sun-swept shores of Miami Beach. Whether it was Mr. Shearing we were hearing, or perhaps the James gang, you know, Joni, Jesse, and Harry, or Kenton, the long, lean one, or Yussel, or Schmulka Davis, or Anthony Benedetto, or Streisand, who, in spite of what he said, was crazy nuts about him, or Nathaniel, or the rocking chair lady, or Sassy, the divine one, or Mr. Class, he was never at a loss for endearing and enduring nicknames. Wherever and whenever this audience tuned in, he always expressed his appreciation, whether it was in their ability and willingness to pause while the full impact of whatever he said settled in, or in their acute hearing, not to mention acute tush. I told you not to mention acute tush. He greeted new listeners to the station as he would someone visiting his home for the first time, with a sweeping gesture of outstretched hand and the words, "Welcome, Pilgrim." He eventually came to prefer the working hours of 10 to 2, largely because he liked the odds. He also took great pride in the station's heritage of broadcasting 24 hours a day by reminding the audience that, as was the custom in Vegas and Atlantic City, they had you covered. A loyal, reliable employee, he never missed a minute sharing the appointed 4 hours, except to take a break, not to mention a respite, also a hiatus during the 5-minute hourly newscasts that were there ostensibly to herald in each new hour. Yet these newscasts, he swore, were not really for the news at all, but were there to allow his lawyer time to renegotiate his hourly contract with management. Described somewhere or other as shy, self-effacing, gregarious, and affable, he was not known to complain about the working conditions, with one nagging exception: the state of his dressing room. Yet I dare say it was never so disheveled as to stop him from inviting a passing starlet or traffic person back there after the show. I guess if Klavan could have Finch, this man was entitled to a dressing room. He had an incredible knack for discovering unknown performing talent, yet was thwarted at every attempt to present these people by program departments and music directors of various station regimes. Due to his dogged determination, stiff upper lip, and belief in the emis, we, the world, can thank him for what are now household names, such luminaries as Have a Cup of Coffee, Jaime, Harry Horlick and his A&P Gypsies, Mark Barron, Norman King, and the noted Shakespearean actor Sir Gilbert Rizzo. I could go on, but as it must to all tributes, it must end, and as it certainly should to this. But not before we recognize the fact that right now, as you and I indulge in idle chit-chat, this man, never known to confuse one with an agent, is searching for an angel to negotiate a contract appropriate to his new radio home, Swinging Among the Stars. No doubt by Wednesday morning at 10, the man of whom there is no humor will pull up to WING AM in a stretched silver cloud, fly up to the second floor, adjust his halo in the full-length studio mirror, sip a glacial hot tea, settle down into some squeaky chair, turn up the volume exactly at 10:05, and bid a fond hello to his new audience by stating in no uncertain terms, "Good morning, heaven." This, with love from Jonathan Kahn and Bob Jones, here for the Dean of American Radio Personalities, William B. Williams.
Count Basie and the kid from Red Bank at your make-believe ballroom here at WNEW. And here for the Dean, William B., it's Bob Jones, and I'd like you to hear what Les Paul has to say. Ladies and gentlemen, Les Paul.
Well, I just know that he was terribly good to us. And I guess he's just been good to all kinds of people. I know just about anybody you could name that was talented that he felt like choosing their records and playing. I never heard him say bad things. I heard him say real good things.
I found that the greatest example as a fellow who does the same work and who aspires to do it well. Mm-hmm. Bill was supportive. Bill was well-wishing. You didn't hear him say a negative, except about those parts of American life that seemed to demand, that cried out for a comment.
Yeah.
That business about the bigots and his going down the South and marching in the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
But about the good recording artists, he simply supported. He made everybody feel good. And I would think as an artist, you must have felt good when you'd make a new recording and suddenly you'd have the radio on and you'd know that you'd had it because Bill wanted to play it.
Well, I remembered one incident that just came to my mind now, Bob. And I was in California at the time. And he actually picked up the phone, called California, and says, "Here's the switch, Les. I'm calling you to tell you you got a number one hit on your hands." And it was Tiger Rag, of all songs. And he also made another comment at the same time. He says, "Why are you so foolish as to put 12 number one hits on an album when you put 11 dogs and one hit on an album?"
That's what everybody's supposed to do.
And he says, "Why are you wasting all those great arrangements of great songs and putting them all on one album?" Well, anyway, the crux of it was, he says, "Isn't this the switch when the disc jockey calls the artist?" And he called me and he says, "I'm going to play this thing and I'm going to make it big. I'm going to make it big." And it was his wishes.
Well wishes.
Yes, and to call Mary and I, we were terribly honored. I've never forgotten. It took this for me to tell the world about it.
And we thank you for telling the world about it, and also for that wonderful song you made for us here at WNEW, which I intend to have on the air, and also Tiger Rag.
Bob, it scares me. I just heard tonight, I got a phone call, and I wasn't aware of it, but they said that Teddy Wilson had passed away.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
And it just scares me because it's the end of a whole era.
Well, we're losing some friends. That's... But as someone said to me on the phone the other day, in my acknowledgement of Teddy's passing and celebration of his life, "Now remember, we have the records, and the children have the records, and they will always know Teddy Wilson because these recordings exist. And in a way that even transcends that, we'll be able to lead even better lives because we've had the experience of William B."
You know, with William B., I had a talk with him at one of the Grammy Awards that I was at, you know?
Yes.
And I was getting a Grammy for something, and Count Basie was there. And the Count was in a wheelchair, and it was sad. And I laid my hand on Count. He was sitting at the piano because once they put him there, he stayed there. In the wheelchair at the piano and so forth and so on. And I says, "Count, how you doing?" He says, "Oh, I'm doing the best I can." And I said, "How am I going to keep it up?" And he says, "Until I go." He says, "What else is there to do?" And I know the last time that I talked to to William B. The last time I talked to Martin Block, the last time I talked to Benny Goodman, any one of them, and myself in the hospital, I talked to myself in the same language. Les, what are you going to do if you manage to get through this thing? And it wasn't to go to the Riviera. It wasn't to bask in the sun. It was to work.
Les Paul, I love you.
Well, I love you too, Bob. And take care of your health. And let's pray to God that we can stick around a while.
This is WNEW, 11:30 on your dial in New
and Mary Ford and the Tiger Rag. Just before that, that wonderful song they made for WNEW. I'm going to call Los Angeles now and get this fella on the phone. I couldn't reach him last night. Here at the Make-Believe Ballroom, Count Basie's band and Joe Williams.
every day. Every day I have the blues. Well, you see me worry, baby, because it's you I hate to lose. Nobody loves me. Nobody seems to care. Nobody loves me. Nobody seems to care. Speaking of bad luck and trouble, well, you know I've had my share. I'm gonna back my fair game.
Good morning, Joe Williams.
Good morning, Bob. How are you this morning?
Well, better now, Joe. I just said to myself that anybody who can bring that much joy has a place in heaven assured. I want to go with you wherever you're going. I think you're just the greatest.
Oh, my God. They are gathering, it seems, you know. When you stop and think about it, they're gathering more and more. The longer we live, the more we lose our people. We don't really lose them, though, because we have to live with their essence and their spirit, as you must know.
Well, I think that's the great lesson of life, that those who we treasure are always with us. They inform our lives.
Oh, great spirit.
Yep.
Here in America, you know.
Yep.
And when I think about the elegance and the warmth and the grace and the wit and the sly, tongue-in-cheek humor and the things that they leave us with and the things that we can aspire to do. I mean, to assimilate, I think. I think we can assimilate those things that the William B. Williams, you know. It's just that we'll miss, you know, Hello World. You know, we're going to miss that, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do without that.
You know?
You know, John O'Hara wrote a story one time, and he said that and I can't quote it, Joe. I can only paraphrase. Somebody was gone. He said, but I don't have to believe it if I don't want to.
Right.
Joe, I love you so much. Thank you for being up so early in Los Angeles and talking. I'm sorry about the mix-up last night. Joe called from, is it true, a men's room of a restaurant? And he got on one of the lines here that has an automatic block on it, and you didn't have enough and who has enough change to make a phone call anymore? Nobody. And they said, no, collect calls. Get out of here. Well, we talked, and I'm glad, and I know it's important for you to be with us this morning because I know how Bill loved you, and I know how you love Bill.
You know, one of my favorite remembrances of him, I thought about it. Well, he did a live remote from Basin Street, opening there, Basin Street East, with Duke Ellington, and Billy Strayhorn played and sang Lush Life. And William B. was kidding Duke Ellington about, how young you dress, Duke, you know. So, I mean, they're gathering, and they can get it together and kid each other again.
Joe Williams was about to sing a song, especially for William B. Over WNEW, Metro Media Radio in New York, this is your make-believe ballroom.
That little jukebox right over there is like a magic key, for it can take me anywhere on wings of memory. I'd give a dollar for a dime. I've got to hear that record play again. Turn love's December into May again. Bring me the thrill just one more time. I'd give a dollar for a dime. I've got to hear that sweet refrain again that carries me down Lover's Lane again. Back when the world was all in rhyme, seems that song was written for us. Every word and note has charm. Our two hearts would sing the chorus as I hold you in my arms. I'd give a dollar for a dime. My aching heart is on my seat again to close my eyes and make believe again. I'd give a dollar for a dime to hear that record one more time.
Bet you Joe would have given a dollar for a dollar's worth of change. I bet he would have given $50. But we talked to Joe Williams, and still to come on the Make Believe Ballroom, here for the Dean, William B., Bob Jones, David Allen, Cy Oliver, Sammy Kahn, Ella Fitzgerald, Peggy Lee, Morton Gould, president of ASCAP, Tony Bennett, Billy Eckstein, Lena Horne, Arthur Prysock. And now at 11:30 at Radio 1130 WNEW, Metro Media Radio in New York, it's time for the morning report from the chairman of the board.
Got you under my my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me, so deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything come near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats, repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time that I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin. Anything come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats how it yells in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Why not use your mentality, step up, wake up to reality. The thought of you makes me stop just before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin. Yes, I've got you under my skin.
Should I forget you? Then let my eyes forget that they have seen the day, my love. And let my ears not hear sweet children at their play, my love. And let my lips forget that they have learned to pray, my love. If I forsake you, if I forsake you, I'll never forget you. But should I forget you, then may I ever know the bitter, not the sweet, my love. And may I never find a friendly hand to greet my love. And let this heart of mine forget that it must beat my love if I forget, if I forget you.
That's an unknown song, virtually, by the man who wrote Tea for Two, Irving Caesar. I know that song because of William B. And so do you. WNEW, this is the morning report from the chairman of the board. Here for the dean, William B. Williams, Bob Jones, and here's the noted American composer and friend of music, Morton Gould.
Morton Gould is, as you know, who are listening, president of ASCAP, and I think among all of us in the radio business, you would have to agree that a man in the position of William B. has tremendous power to do well or ill. And what seems to emerge, as most of us have known through the years, is
earchecks.com.